Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Previously on The Rundown with Jeff McGregor.
Like, it's brutal. It is so, there's some sections that are absolutely just disgustingly steep. And then, you know, so we were going aid station to aid station, and I still kept feeling great. Like, my knee was really bad, but just didn't want to be anywhere else. I felt like it was in my control to finish it. I just had to keep going and deal with the pain, but there was too many positives. There was too many people there supporting me, and I had to keep going. And I mean, I think at the end I was suffering, but for the majority of it, I think we were just having a good time.
On this episode of The Rundown, I got to speak with sports nutritionist, triathlete, and Brava co-creator, Steph Jamin. We spoke about her introduction to running, how sports help her stay active and spend time with friends, and how her love for triathlon led to the creation of Brava. On top of it all, she's a sports nutritionist, so it was fun to pick her brain on that, especially when it comes to fueling for these long endurance races. Hope you enjoyed this talk as much as I did. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, I want to talk about the coronavirus and its effect on the running world. It was announced just a few days ago that the Tokyo Marathon, set to take place March 1st, will be canceled for all non-professional runners. The reason they're doing this is to avoid people getting exposed to the disease, which was more recently found in Tokyo. Thousands of runners are devastated by the news. So much training and commitment goes into it, so I can definitely sympathize with them, especially with it being a world major. And with the Tokyo Olympics coming up in a few months, which usually hosts thousands of travelers and athletes, it'll be interesting to see if measures like this will be put into place there too. Speaking of the Olympics, the US trials are happening in just a few weeks on February 29th. One runner I'll have my eye on is Jim Walmsley. He's more known for his incredible trail running performances, winning multiple times at Western States, one of the toughest 100 milers around. At the trials, he'll be tackling his first ever marathon. In preparation for the race, he had training months topping over 1,000 kilometers, which is a lot, even for most elite trail runners. I can't wait to watch and follow along, because you know everything is on the line for all of these athletes. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. If you're in the world of triathlon, you are probably familiar with the brand Brava, which is a triathlon gear. They make tri-suits for women, and they've kind of exploded on the scene. You tend to see them all over the Ironman courses. I know here in Mont-Tremblant, you definitely see them a lot. And I'm here with my next guest. She is the creator of Brava, and she's also a dietitian and sports nutritionist, which we'd love to get into a little bit because we know how important nutrition is in the world of triathlon. I'd like to welcome Steph to the podcast.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On such short notice, yeah. I think we kind of put this together this morning at our track session, which I think I had the pleasure of meeting you through track and training and kind of like self-improvement in the running world. So I'm pretty grateful for that. But definitely thanks for coming in, and definitely want to talk to you and get to know you a little bit more. Just talking to you before this, it's funny, like when you meet people and especially in the running world, you see everybody as a runner. And I think just in a short conversation just before we got rolling here that you're so much more. You know, you have a master's and you're a dietitian, and you're well educated in that field too. So really appreciate you coming in to talk about all this.
Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll get into just like where you started in sport. Like, how did you grow up and like, were you always an athletic kid and stuff?
Yeah. I wouldn't say I was always an athletic kid. My parents weren't really into sports, and I was the eldest child. I have brothers, but they're much younger than me. But I really picked up sports more in high school. I played pretty serious basketball in high school. I was on the team from bantam all the way to juvenile basketball, and played competitively in all the tournaments. So I was really more into team sports, but never really, like, running never really hit me before I think I was even 18. I also snowboarded a lot in high school. I mean, that was like the age of Jake Burton and, you know, being one of the first on the slopes on a board. But other than those two sports, I wasn't really into anything else as I was a kid.
Were you a competitive kid? Like, did your brothers drive some competition into you?
Not at all.
No?
No. They were not either on teams or anything. And respectively, they're 6 and 8 years younger. So, you know, we weren't even in the same school at the same time ever. Yes, they played soccer and things like that. And I would go encourage them and vice versa. But there was no real competition between us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at that level. We were just like, my mom's Italian, and we just have this very easygoing household. And yeah, there was no competition at home, really.
Was it kind of like, I feel I'm also coming from like an Italian household. And I always say, you know, I got into hockey and soccer when I was 12. So like, my dad never put me in sport. But when I asked him, that's when he kind of put me in. Was it kind of the same for you? Like, did you discover sports on your own and that's when you wanted to get into them? Or were your parents pushing you or encouraging you to get into sport?
Yeah, I discovered it through school. Yeah, like, met the basketball coach through the school. And of course, if I asked my mom to play basketball, she would say yes. And I was able to go to all tournaments and stuff. But it was more coming from me and what I wanted to do and at that time.
Mm.
Yeah.
How far did you take the basketball?
I stopped playing basketball when I got to CJEP here. At that point, I was 16, 17, and I had started working at a ski shop and didn't really, you know, I didn't take time to try out for the team, and I was kind of busy on weekends working. And when I was working at the ski shop, I made a ton of friends there. We were, you know, religiously Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, we were going to J Peak, we were going to St. Silver, we were going everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't remember ever skiing that much in my life, right? So, yeah, I kind of turned more to skiing and working than playing competitive sports at that age.
Did that change at any point for you, or did it kind of continue like that the whole way?
Through CJEP?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never got back into basketball, actually.
Okay.
I was a good shooter. I played point guard position in high school, so I still like to shoot basketball sometimes or shoot hoops, but like, going to play a pickup game or anything, I haven't done that in forever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like, the ski life kind of took over.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're in that life, that's what you do, you know?
Yeah. But like, CJEP was like that. I don't know how I had so much energy, but I feel like we all did when we were not even 20 years old, but we were like, we had 7 classes. We were going skiing every night, every weekend. We were partying. We were doing all these things, and we had all the energy in the world. And yeah, that's what I did when I was that age.
Do you still hit the slopes, or?
Yes, but a lot less. And I won't go if it's like minus 30. I'm just like, forget it. I don't know how I did it when I was younger, but yeah. I don't have as much motivation. And I also have less time now with a lot more commitments. But I do still like a good powder day. And I've also had a taste of riding on the West Coast, both in the U.S. and out up in B.C. And the conditions are you can't really compare them to the conditions here. So, yeah, I do a lot less skiing now or riding. I've never skied, actually. I say skiing, but snowboarding. Mm-hmm. I've never, I don't snowboard as much as I used to.
So what's the focus now? Or like, where did the focus go after snowboarding? Like, is it usually one thing, or like it's snowboarding instead of basketball? And then after snowboarding, what kind of happens?
Well, I kind of discovered running when I was about 18. So my father, my parents separated when I was really young, and my father left for a job. So he was working as an expat, and he was living in Hawaii, still does. So I would spend my summers there, like almost every summer of my youth. And I mean, Hawaii, you go a lot of, there's a lot of runners. Obviously the weather is conducive to running. And, I remember that summer I turned 18, I was in Hawaii and my dad was training for his first marathon. Like, he'd never done that before. He was not really an avid runner. He just decided, like, this is something I'd like to do. And he was training for the Honolulu Marathon, which I think starts something at like 4 a.m. because it's so hot. It gets so hot there so fast. And he just kind of motivated me to put running shoes on and just jog with him. And that summer is when everything kind of really clicked. Like, I used to not pay attention really to what I would eat or, you know, but I would drink pop and like just eat whatever my parents would serve me. Or I wasn't a kid who was very preoccupied, or a young woman who was preoccupied with my body image or anything like that. And at that time, I kind of had this revelation of like, oh, running makes me feel healthy. It makes me feel good. I feel good after I do it. I feel good while I'm doing it. I should do this more. And I should probably be eating less of these quote unquote, like, not so good foods, which got me into, like, you know, training a little bit harder and signing up for, you know, I had signed up for my first half marathon like a year or two after that, and just like having a little taste of like competition. That's when that started, and that's when I had decided to also apply to nutrition, because I was like, if I had this kind of revelation that like the way you eat and the way you move your body can have positive health outcomes, it'd be great to spread the word, like, in a scientific way. Mm. So that's how that all came kind of about when I was a young adult.
Cool. Yeah. What was the first race you did? Was it the half marathon or?
Yeah. Because like I would run 5 or 10 Ks, like really non-structured, no coaching. But it was the Montreal half marathon here, the Oasis, I think it was at the time when we started on the bridge, one of the first years. And I ran that race and it was a really cool experience. And then I slowly met more and more friends who were running and we would do it together. We signed up for Ottawa.
Ottawa's fun.
Yeah. So, but I pretty much stuck to like, you know, 5, 10 Ks and 21 Ks, like nothing really serious at that point, but just like, yeah, one or two races a year, and I liked running, but it was never like I wanted to qualify for Boston at a young age. I never even thought of that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you, so was the focus just purely having fun, or just to start and finish and get your medal? Or was there time goals?
There was time goals, but nothing aggressive. I actually am not naturally a fast runner. I struggle with running. And I know, like, putting in the work, but I've known people who have like gone from like, you know, like couch to 5K kind of thing. And they're like zooming by me. And I'm like, really? So running's always been a little bit of a struggle for me, but I know that if I put in the work, like, it'll come, but it just comes a lot less naturally for me. Mm. I don't know what it is, but anyway, all that to say is now I'm kind of fast forwarding to my mid-20s, but I had a huge separation, and then I moved out on my own, and I joined this boxing gym called Studio Breathe at the time. And I met this really great friend of mine today who's like my best friend. Her name is Angie. And we would box together because we were like same height, same strength. So we would always be paired up. So we got to chatting, and her boyfriend at the time was starting a triathlon club, like locally here, actually in St. Henry. And she was like, well, why don't you buy a, like, she knew I was a runner. So she was like, well, why don't you buy a used, because she didn't like running. So she was like, why don't you buy a used bike and you could come train with us? Like, you can come bike with us. And then I was like, okay, like, I'm pretty gullible. Like, I'll do a lot of things people will ask me to do just because I'm like, okay, that sounds fun. Like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So I did. I bought a used Giant. I think I paid like $500 or $600 for this used road bike. And I fell in love with cycling. Like, I really did. I was like, wow. Because of my struggles with running, I was like, you can go so much farther, so much faster. This is great. Like, you know, like, I was looking at runners on my bike and I was like, haha, you know, like, yeah, this is awesome. I really liked the freedom of the feeling of being on a bike. And so then Will, her boyfriend, was like, okay, well, we're starting a triathlon club and we're all going to be racing at Esprit. And I was like, oh, great. Well, they have duathlons. Yeah, the local race that, and it's a really great beginner race that, and it's, you know, it's flat. You can have spectators. Like, it's really conducive to your first triathlon. But I wasn't even thinking about triathlon because I was like, I can't swim. Well, I can swim. But like I said, like, I was never interested in swimming when I was a kid. And my mom never had me in swim lessons. I forgive her today, not having put me in swim lessons. Because I ended up learning on my own because Will was like, well, you're not going to come to the triathlon club and just do duathlons. You're going to have to learn how to swim. So then I was like, no. And then he finally convinced me. And honestly, I showed up at Parc Jean Drapeau in like a billabong bikini in like 2009 or whatever year it was, and basically used a kickboard and learned how to kick, and, you know, slowly but surely learned like crawl and technique, and I pretty much learned how to swim as an adult. So, and I don't regret it. It's probably one of the best things I've ever done, accepting that challenge and, you know, putting myself into that new sport, because I ended up obviously falling in love with triathlon after that year and just wanted to push it, you know, further and further. And yeah,
it's a variety too that,
yes,
that I love. And our starts are pretty similar. I think my parents did put me in swimming lessons, but I was definitely not one of the faster kids and had to learn how to swim faster. And it takes a lot of work, right? But I started with a duathlon at Esprit as well. And that's hard too. I find running and then biking, and like, you're not used to transitions. I remember my second run was just like, I just cramped immediately because nutrition comes into play in there, even if it's short. And but yeah, it's everything's work. I think a good lesson there is, everything for the first time is always hard. And as long as you stick with it, what were some like early struggles that you faced getting into a brand new sport? And I mean, even with the running, you say like you struggle to make those improvements. Can you pinpoint some things that maybe looking at it, if you like put in the work, what does that mean for you?
Today or back then?
I'd say back then, you know, looking back, maybe some early, I mean, there's some things I can clearly say that I could have changed then, but also, you know, there's new challenge. There's always new challenges with running or whether you're in triathlon or.
Yeah. You know, I didn't take it too seriously at the beginning. I mean, I don't think I ever really did take myself too seriously in triathlon. I really just went with the flow and had fun, and I would do it in teams sometimes. Like, we would, you know, take the person's strength and just kind of do it in a team. And I feel like I wasn't as busy as I was today. So, you know, the time wasn't an issue. But I definitely did struggle in the pool. Like, I didn't like swimming at first, but I came to really like swimming, quite a few years ago, like when I was training for a full Ironman, I actually really liked being in the pool. I haven't swam in like since the summer, actually. I kind of miss being in the pool, but at the same time, like I'm not training for anything, and I'd rather focus on running and doing some cycling. And yeah, so I just need to shift focus sometimes, I guess. With three sports, improving in all three is not always easy, because it's a lot of training hours required in terms of if you want to get the quality in.
Yeah, and for swimming, I think you got to be in the pool like 5-6 days a week to improve. And
yeah, at least three, yeah. I would say.
And it becomes a daunting task, I think, even for, like, I still have a dream of making Kona one day. And my first Ironman was 11 hours. I'm 2 hours away from even coming anywhere close, you know, to a top age group spot. But it's an expensive sport. And it's
also,
it takes a lot of dedication to kind of to get there, because you got to go in with at least one strength. You know, for me, I think it was like taking a step back to focus on running, improving the run, and then going back a stronger runner, and then developing the biking again and the swimming again. But yeah, I do miss the training and being part of that. I think what you're saying too, mate, rings like it's familiar to me as well. Cause like when I met my coaches, they were training for like the ultra triathlons, and it's like, come along, you know, come for this ride. And like, you don't realize how strong you're getting. You're just there having fun, and they're doing their training, but they're kind of tricking you into training, and you're loving it for different reasons, you know. But do you feel that takes the pressure off and just allows you to, you know, when I think it's important for people to have fun first and foremost, especially when it's so demanding with the training and the hours. And do you think that really helped you early on to kind of sink your teeth into the sport? And
yeah, and I progressed in a very typical way. So joined a club, you know, was racing sprint and Olympic distance, enjoying those distances, not taking anything too seriously. And then the year that I signed up for my first half Ironman, then I was like, okay, I'm going to need some help and probably a coach that's not coaching the whole club, where I would have like a set training plan that was like kind of not necessarily one size fits all, but more of it wasn't personalized or individualized. And you know, I was like, I kind of owe it to myself to give it my best shot and really, you know, train properly for it. And that's when I met Bart Rolle from Bart Coaching. He was just starting his business that year. He had like left his computer engineering job, and he was starting out. You know, there was one session at the pool, I remember, and it was like really a personalized coaching through Chaining Peaks. It was like in the very beginnings where that was becoming popular. And he really set me up for success. He's a great coach because he's quality over quantity. And I've always really appreciated that in his style of coaching. Cause when I was consulting as a sports nutritionist, some of my clients were training like 25 hours a week. And I was like, how do you have time for that? Like I didn't ever understand. Well, I mean, the fact that I could get the training for the same type of event done in 15, 16 hours and somebody's doing 10 hours more. Mm-hmm. Like that's a significant jump in training time
with
and dedication.
A full-time job.
Yeah. Like right now I have pretty much a full-time job and Brava that I do 15 to 20 hours a week. It's a lot. Like sometimes people throw hours out there like, oh, I work 60 hours a week or 70 or 80 hours a week. But that's actually a lot. Like if you're actually doing that, I don't know when you're sleeping or doing all your other activities. So yeah,
it's huge. Yeah. And, it was interesting. When I interviewed Cody Beals at Ironman this year, like he won second year in a row, and he's like, yeah, I think he trains like 25 hours a week.
Yeah, but he's a professional. He does that for a living.
I know, but comparing him to other triathletes, pro triathletes, they're, who might be training 30, 40 hours a week, he's doing this thing, quality over quantity, and having these really focused workouts, and the results are there too. So you have to argue the, you know, the whole thing, you know, how much do you actually need to do? And, you know, there's something to be said about being gifted athlete too, and having the ability to do it. But yeah, it makes me question.
Anyway, I wouldn't have signed up for a 25-hour plan, so no. I'm glad I did my Ironman with Wes.
Yeah. And how did that work out for you?
The full?
Well, yeah. I mean, talk about why, what made you want to jump to these distances? I know why I did it. I met my coaches. They were these ultra triathletes, and they had done multiple Ironmans, and I'm like, I had just done an Olympic, like at that point, and I was like, I really want to do an Ironman too. So how do I get there? Then you work it backwards. So how did it happen for you?
Yeah. So that would have been 2013. So I was working as a dietitian, and I was working also, well, I was doing sports nutrition at the time. I was consulting, which I did for several years, like I think 8 years. And when I signed up for the half, I'd already consulted clients who were doing triathlon and longer distances than myself. And also through the club, BART Coaching wasn't really ever a club like the first club I was in. It was more, there were pool sessions or a track session if you wanted to attend, but the basics was you had your personalized plan. And, so when we would be at club type events, you know, races people would all go to, you'd meet the people who were doing longer distances, and then you would ride with them at training camp. And I think it's just that community of people, and you're like, well, okay, this is kind of just the next step, right? I'd like to challenge myself to do a longer distance. I know I'd be able to do it. And then putting all of that together, because if you break apart a half Ironman, you know, they're digestible distances on their own, but putting them together, that's where that training comes in. And like all the brick training and like the transitions, and then bringing the nutrition into all that. That it was just the next challenge and kind of the next progression where I felt like, okay, I like triathlon. I like where this is going, and okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it.
I'm going to try.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Did you ever think you would do an Ironman? And like when you actually,
no. You know? So that's a good story, because I think I raced halves for like 3-4 years. And through that, through the training for the last couple, I met Jacinthe, who is the other co-founder of Brava. Ever since we've met, we've raced together, we always pop a bottle of champagne after. And it was the 2014, we had raced that summer. We had trained a lot together. We had kind of just met. Like we met actually at a 100K relay, not a relay race, but like a time trial. We were raising funds for, I think it was Fondation Charles Bruno at the time. Anyway, BART put a team of women that were all the same strength on the bike, and basically we got up one rainy spring morning and like got muddy and did like I don't remember how many circuits around the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve,
right?
Anyway, all one behind each other and relaying. So we met there, and anyway, all that to say is after the half Ironman we did together, we went over to her place. There was champagne, bunch of other friends, and so it was like, okay, pull out your credit card, we're gonna sign up for another race. And I'm like, okay, like obviously, because I say yes to everything. And this time it was the Ironman Muskoka. So Ironman in Muskoka, there, it was like the first one, like there was ever only half Ironman there before. And like, little me, who's like super gullible, we did, and like had a couple glasses of champagne, like no one really looked at the elevation gains and like all of that race before actually paying. So then, so four of us signed up for it, and it was like, okay, like this is it. We're doing a full next year, and I survived. Anyway, I more than survived, but all that to say is like, yeah, champagne and credit cards is what made me sign up for an Ironman.
That's amazing. That's a great story. And what was how was the training? Was it different or just more? And like, was it overwhelming for you? Like, how did that? It's double the distance.
Yeah.
So a half Ironman, for anybody that doesn't know, is 1.9K swim with a 90K bike and a half marathon.
Yeah.
So double that for an Ironman. It's
3.8, 180,
and 42.2.
Yeah.
It's a long day.
Yeah. So people, everyone says that it's a long day, like, but it's actually not a long day when it's going well. And like, you know, my work colleagues were like, oh my God, you're going to be like exercising longer than we're sitting at work all day. And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. But I was so ready for it. So training for Ironman, I would never do it alone. So good thing I had three other gullible friends who signed up that same day. But we were, you know, it was before anyone had kids, and like, we were training together. We had rented a chalet in Tremblant all spring. We raced the half to prepare. And I think the longest training week like I had for Ironman was 18 hours. And that's because we rented a cottage in Muskoka that weekend and did like a mini training camp. And we did the course that day. Mm. A little bit less than the course, but like, we raced the course. We, you know, we went around and checked where the run would be. And like, and I remember telling my coach a couple weeks before the race, I was like, I've never ran a marathon. And the longest I've run, because we run for time, was about 32K. And I was freaking out because I'm like, 10K is like a whole other 10K. And I mean, it's like the last 10K of an Ironman. Like, I'm never going to make it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, don't worry, like have confidence in, you know, the work that you've put in. Like, I know you're going to do it. Like, you can't worry about that. And I, you know, that's how it went. That's exactly how it went. Like, you know, the taper feeling when you're like, oh my God, like, how am I ever going to race an Ironman like in 4 days? I think everyone gets that, but you just have to have confidence in the work you put in. And because the fatigue that you build up through all those training hours and the bricks that you do, and it's like, sometimes I'd be like, it's raining, can I do my bike ride? The other day I was like, well, you can, but you know, like having your long, like your brick and then your long run the next day and then the recovery swim was always super key to putting all those things together and like, you know, giving your muscles the right memory to perform on that day. So,
and it might rain on race day
too. It might rain on race day.
Mm-hmm.
It's rarely happened to me. Thankfully it didn't happen on an Ironman day, but we also had really nice weather. We ended up swimming almost all together, cycling, and we would cross each other on the run. Like I was ready for that day, and I actually, you know, I didn't have any expectations. Like I said, I wasn't trying to compete with any friends or anybody. And I was in like the 30 to 35 age group, I think, at the time. And, you know, I wasn't looking to get a Kona spot. Like, I was really just, this is my first Ironman and I want to enjoy it. And I crossed the finish line under 12 hours, and like, I didn't expect that at all.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's really well done. It's not easy.
It's hilly. Like, yeah. I remember training that winter. Like, I had runs, just like 1 hour runs where I'd be running up and down Camillier Hood, repeats. Yeah. But since then, I've been such a better climber on the bike. And I still, like, when there's a hill and where I'm running, I'm able to like maintain the relatively same pace. So like, I think all that training has paid off for like now, just when I'm cycling or just when I'm running. Just learning that technique up to climb and Yeah.
And as a sports nutritionist,
mm-hmm.
So how do you, now, you know, you've done all the distances leading up to Ironman, like, how do you prepare your nutrition for races, and how does it change from distance to distance?
Yeah. So, I'm a very, rational and very easygoing dietitian, I would say. But one of the things I really excelled in was making race plans. So I would follow, you know, triathletes are very special in that a lot of them are very type A, but they're very motivated and, you know, they want to do the right things and, you know, they want to have a structure, kind of just like their training plan. And that's what I would provide in terms of nutrition. So most serious athletes who would sign up for a big race the year after, they'd be in my office in December, Jan. And if there was some you know, weight management goal or body composition goal, like we needed to get that settled, like at the beginning, because it's not really ideal to be, you know, losing weight while the training volume is really ramping up. Like it can happen, but it's ideal if there's anything that needs to be done on that perspective to kind of do it in the winter months and like kind of just set a good, you know, balanced meal plan, or just structure around how to be eating around training before the volume ramps up. And then really your gut can be trained. So the really important thing with sports nutrition is, of course, it needs to be individualized. People tolerate certain things and don't tolerate certain things. And some people can eat like a slice of pizza. And the really important thing is to test things and to really train your gut, because you can. Like if you never, ever, ever eat or never, ever, ever take any electrolytes or sports drinks, obviously if you take it all in on sports day, your body's going to be like, you know, what the hell? So, you know, training your gut and making sure you test everything. So I would be following, you know, the athlete to make sure that things were being tested on, you know, long rides, just getting the basics of sports nutrition in, like how to fuel, how to fuel during, and then how to recover properly. And then like, you know, nutrient timing in terms of like when you're training in the evenings versus the mornings, or, you know, so there's a lot of details that go into like looking at somebody's training and saying like, how can we optimize, you know, your eating to optimize your recovery and your performance. And that's really the way it needs to be looked at. And it's never really a one size fits all, but just having those skills and that, you know, that scientific background. I think to this day, the literature that I read the most are sports nutrition papers. They're like, you know, when you know the researchers, you know, the names and their papers come out, they're just interesting to read, especially the ones that are practical and that can be applied in practice. So yeah, having kind of that that baggage and that knowledge, for sure, when you get to a half iron distance, you can make or break it with nutrition. I mean, Olympic, anyway. It depends on the person, but you would need at least a sports drink and maybe something solid on the bike. But half iron, we're looking at like some type of, you know, carb loading, making sure whatever you're eating the 3-4 days before the race is adequate. Trying to avoid any GI issues. Breakfast on race day needs to be something familiar, something that you tolerate well, something that's filling, but that won't make you feel unwell, like you ate too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, fueling regularly, that's a big issue. So fueling regularly during, putting a timer and timing that if you need to remind yourself to kind of have a bite of something or, you know, a swallow of something every 15, 20 minutes is really key, because it's really easy to be super into it. And then an hour later, like, oh shit, I got to eat. And then, but it's not like a Clif bar. You're not supposed to just eat it all at the same time and then just eat nothing for an hour. Like ideally you would be spreading those things out and then, you know, when you take water and when you take sports drinks, you should alternate depending on how much sodium that person loses. So individualizing what drinks they're taking, the extra salt tabs that they might need. And then it's really different. Fueling on a bike is different than on the run. So how do you transition to that? How do you integrate caffeine for fatigue? Like, so there's so many things you can do with nutrition that you can optimize. And then once you find the perfect recipe for you, keep it for that distance. And you know, test for longer distances and test when there's new products on the market, or like homemade types of products that you can have, or like, you know, dried fruits and things. But, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to see a lot of athletes and do a lot of plans. Even some ultra runner plans, like I had done the biggest spreadsheet for, UTH when it first came out. This one athlete, I remember, we looked at all the
Ultra Trail here in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We looked at all the like the segments and the verticals, and like we estimated his pace. We looked at everything that was at each aid station, estimated his needs throughout the whole event. Like it's laborious, but it's so worth it. Like when you know, like you can, there's people who can just wing it, but I think that some people need that structure, and if they want to perform, I think it's best to, if they want to put like the best on, you know, the best bets on their side is, I think nutrition is really important.
We're going to talk, from before my next Ironman for sure.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Cause I can say that, you know, my first one went well, it was 11 hours. It was also raining, which I loved cause I did training in the rain and whatever. And it was my first one. I was like so happy, but the second one was a different story. It was hot and, mm-hmm. And I had problems on my bike the first time around, having to go to the bathroom once. But once I went, then I was like, it was like a rocket took off. Like I was back to normal, feeling great. But the second time, not the same story at all. Like
you had GI issues.
Got off the bike and then I could not digest anything on my run. And I was looking forward to the run because that's my strength, right? And I don't know why. I don't know. I couldn't figure out that part. It's so important for all the train, for anybody training for half or full Ironman. Like you put so much time into your training, you better put some time into your nutrition because you're right. It can make or break your experience. And it's also the intensity, right? Like when you're higher intensity when you're racing, so that therefore it's harder to digest. So you need to train your stomach to be able to handle higher intensity and the fuel at the same time. Mm-hmm. My question is around when you're testing something, what's a big enough sample size to know if this is going to work for you or not? Is it once? Is it three times? Can you give some kind of, for somebody, you know, maybe that just getting into the sport, or like, how do I test for different foods? And like, simply put, you know, I'll have some, maybe I'm going to do that Gatorade and water, but you know, what foods should I be eating? And like, I know what I like. If I had it my way, I'd eat pizza the whole time, but it might not work, you know?
Yeah. So the way I would typically advise is to say, you would try one thing at a time. It's almost like eliminating things out. So you always need water, like, because when you're eating solid foods or gels or anything that has a concentrated amount of carbohydrates, sugar, you want to be taking that in with some water, not with a sport drink, because then you're kind of diluting sugar with more sugar. And if you do that often enough, you might have osmotic diarrhea, which is just like, that's when people like, just like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom. Like now it's just like too high of a concentration of sugar, such that, instead of drawing water like into the cells, I mean, it's drawing water out and into your GI and it just flushes it out to like for the concentration. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first error some people make is that they won't take water and they'll just swallow Gatorade or a sport drink with everything. So you always need both on your bike. So test one, or on your run, test one sport drink at a time. I mean, you obviously have to like the flavor that, and it, the nutritional values need to be, you know, at like the biggest thing would be the concentration of carbohydrate and then sodium. There's a certain ratio of those nutrients that have been shown to be absorbed a bit quicker. But anyway, if somebody needs more sodium, you know, some of those sport drinks have more sodium, or you can add more sodium with salt tabs. But just testing the right amount of sodium, I mean, we have a good idea of a salty sweater or a not salty sweater and what volumes they typically need. So testing the sport drink, and then testing something solid, and then gels or jujubes. So like those are kind of the three things you want to, because I think variety in a long endurance race is kind of nice, in terms of if you end up on race day not being able to chew so much and you'd rather have a gel or a jujube, you know that you tolerate that and you've got some backup. So normally I would have the person test the amount of the grams of carbohydrate per hour that I would be recommending, plus the amount of milliliters of liquid per kilo per hour, and that's all liquids combined. So I would make like a mock plan, and I'd have them test it and like at least once, like as a whole. Did they like it? Did they tolerate it? Did they have enough energy? Did they have any GI symptoms? Did they feel unwell after the training? And if they're like, well, everything seemed to go fine, it seemed to be okay. It's rarely, if you tolerate everything, it's rarely a one-off. But if you really don't like something or you don't tolerate something, you'll kind of know right away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So I would actually, because you can kind of prescribe a number of carbs per hour and protein, grams of protein per hour. Those aren't based on body weight, but liquids are. And then you would just spread that out through the duration of the endurance event and or activity, depending, because like obviously you can get more carbs in and protein if on a bike versus a run. And yeah, just have the person test also those volumes. Are they able to get it all in? And if they're not and they don't have enough energy, how are other ways where we can get the energy in?
Yeah, because like during my, like, you almost panic, right? If it's not going well, I abandoned my plan.
You know? And then
I had sport drink on my bike and it wasn't going well. So I'm like, okay, screw this. We're going to go to Gatorade, which probably even worse for me because it's, the sugar is just so much higher, right? But yeah, I get that question a lot from people. I can't handle gels. I've tried this gel, that gel, but it's more to it than that. I like what you said about the, you know, switching water or drinking water with a gel instead of drinking a sport drink with a gel. Yeah. It's too much, you know, and I don't, you know, we don't always think of that, especially with, just running, where you know you have few options, or you're taking what's on the course, right? It's a bit different. Like Ironman, you can kind of keep things on you. Well, marathons too, or any kind of running race, you can keep it on you too. But not everyone knows that.
Mm-hmm.
How does it change from like triathlon to let's say a marathon? Is it much different or?
Yeah. So typically on the run, like no solids with protein or complex carbohydrates. So, you know, maybe on an ultra run, like an ultra trail, but for a marathon, like a road race, I would never recommend a Clif bar. You know what I mean? You'd be okay if you ate well that morning and you're having, you know, gels, depending, I don't know, I'm just going to say like randomly every 30 or 40 or 45 minutes with water at the aid station, and then like chugging some sport drink as you go. The thing is, it's hard to get gels that have a lot of electrolytes in them. So if it's really hot, if it's sunny and you're, you know, you sweat a lot and you know, getting the salt, the electrolytes in, it is a bit tougher with just gels, which is where the sport drink comes in. I mean, you need to hydrate as well. But yeah, it's easy. on a run, it'd be about 5 to 7 mL per kilo of sport drink, which comes to, like, depending on your weight, like about a cup to a cup and a half, sometimes 2 cups, depending, which might sound like a lot, but if you're taking a quarter cup every 15 minutes, that's not so bad. So that's why you kind of have to break it up. And it's kind of hard to do and plan if you don't know, if you didn't even looked at the course and looked at the aid stations, or, you know, if you don't want to run with a belt or a bottle on you, obviously that's not everyone wants to do that either. So you just try and kind of try and optimize it based on, you know, the race, the race course, what the person can carry on them, if anything. And yeah, it's really individualized.
Yeah. It's crazy though. And you'd say, so if I'm going to, let's say for a marathon, you know, I should have a gel every 45, let's say.
It also depends which gel you're taking.
Yeah. So I'm using like a maple syrup, like a natural, you know, natural maple. It's like sea salt and ginger, like I use Endurance Tap, but there's also Brix and other ones. Is that sufficient, you think? Can you get enough electrolytes from that, or are you not getting enough?
It's limit. Again, it depends on the environment that you're in, the temperature, the sun, the amount you're sweating. I mean, you know, you run a fast marathon. So, I mean, in 3 hours, I mean, you're not going to become completely like hyponatremic and like keel over. But yeah, some people need to, like, you've heard of people who've overhydrated, and you know, you got to watch those things, because, you know, those simple balances in our body can be thrown off. But yeah, gels can be definitely sufficient. And then it's really about rehydrating post. So that's kind of a key thing. Like, so your Gatorade can come in after, or like some kind of oral rehydration solution, or even just recovering with foods that are a bit saltier and that have liquid in them, like fruits and things like that. So, you know, and obviously some sort of protein for the muscle recovery, but all of those things come into play. So like after the marathon, you can help yourself recover by choosing the right foods, you know.
Is there a time limit for that?
So
is there an ideal window?
Yeah. So we used to think of like the window was like 30 to 60 minutes. And oh my God, if you miss that window, like,
God forbid.
But actually the latest studies show like 24 to 48 hour window. So, you know, those studies are, you know, they're very clinical. They're looking at, you know, blood samples, they're looking at biopsies, muscle biopsies and things like that. But in the real practical world, you're going to get hungry before that, right? And you're going to want to eat before that. So, I mean, yeah, ideally you know, sometimes you're not hungry right when you finish a race. Like, I'm sure you've had that feeling where you arrive and you're like, I just can't stomach anything.
Say, yeah.
So that's when you should like at least drink something, get something in that's at least a little bit salty, even, you know, drink water and try and eat as soon as you can after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I really want to eat something, and then other days it's just like, no, you know, I can't eat, I can't stomach anything right now, you know? And, so anyways, it's different for everybody, like you say, and different on the day kind of thing. Wait, does the same thing apply like when you're just training? Do you think is that going to help? Like, especially in these long blocks, is that, you know, equally as important to
recover?
Yeah.
So recovery is important in the sense that, you know, your nutrient reserves over time, if you have a big training week and you're training, you know, let's say, like you ran tonight and let's say you're running tomorrow morning. So recovering between those sessions, if you want to be optimizing both, is pretty key. And then, yeah, your glycogen stores can go down over time if you're not eating enough carbohydrate, you know, for the effort that you're giving. So for sure you may not be conscious of it, but if you're having like a sluggish day, or you're, you know, you're just not running, you just don't feel yourself like on the run, like yeah, it could be an off day, but it could also be your nutrition. And so, yeah, ideally you'd be recovering as, you know, as best possible. If you're doing like a 1 hour recovery run, like community jog with friends, like
easy.
Yeah. But if you're having harder training sessions like and yeah, like track and that are at least an hour or more, I would say, you know, pay attention. And like, I remember swimming when I had swims that were an hour and a half, like all out, and we would do like, you know, 4K. I'd be hungry even before getting out of the pool. Like, and again, it needs to be individualized because some people prefer training in the morning and then some at night. So, you know, what you eat in that 24-hour window also, like, or in the 24 hours of the day really should be geared around you and when you're training. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to eat at, like, the same times everyone else does.
Yeah.
And meals could be different. It could be, like, snacks, recovery snacks, if it's later in the evening. So there's so many possibilities and so many, you know, ways to integrate foods that people like and people enjoy. I really like to take the approach of real food in terms of recovery and just taking that more, you know, intuitive and like holistic approach to you know, to even sports nutrition, because food impacts us so much. We make decisions around food so often in a day, and then when we have to make them around sport, like it's like another task,
another
right
layer,
so
yeah.
If you can integrate it in like how you nourish yourself and your body, you know, I think it's the best of two worlds.
What's your take on, because I'm vegan, so mm-hmm. what's your take on you know, the plant-based versus you know, more of a meat eater diet? Is there, do you have an opinion on that at all? Or
so I mean, my opinion is I think people should eat in the way that makes them feel healthy. At the same time, though, I'm not a proponent of like extremism at all. I think that if everyone decreased significantly their meat intake, we'd all be better for it. I think that being vegan is like a choice that is, I respect it so much. There's so many implications, you know, environmental, political, that are around that. And yeah, it's funny, like dieting, I don't like diets. I don't like calling things diet. It's more of like a lifestyle and a way of, you know, of nourishing yourself. I don't think everyone needs to go vegan, although I think that everyone has a huge advantage to significantly decrease meat intake. Yeah. I myself, it's been years. I'm not vegan, but I'm, you know, almost vegetarian, I'd say. I do eat some fish and occasionally chicken, but it's very rare. And I won't say no if, like, I've gone over and my mom's made meat lasagna. Do you know what I mean? So I think that, and I'm not the person, I'm not a dietitian. Like, it's not, my job is not to say eat like me to be, you know, like, it's really guiding the person or the athlete or whoever it is to say, how can you be your healthiest eating this way?
Right.
Right?
What makes you feel the best.
Yeah, but I do think that a lot of people and our environment would have such a greater impact if everyone, like if everyone that was eating a ton of meat, because meat portions, let's be honest, are too big. If everyone reduced their portions and only the people who ate a lot of meat would just only eat meat at one meal per day, that would reduce everything by almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the impact. I think it's hard for people to make a big change, which is why all, you know, all these Beyond Meat things and burgers are coming out. Well, that was not really the point of being vegan in the first place, right? It wasn't to like replace, like, because if you're really vegan and you've been for a long time, you likely don't actually like the taste of meat or the texture of meat, or there was something that put you off. whether it was the environment, animal welfare, but now we've ended up with these highly processed foods that have health, like a ton of health claims on them. Whereas, like, I mean, the original vegan person would be having vegetables and beans and rice and, you know, just normal, basic, non-processed foods. Sometimes I feel like the world should go back to where we were before, like the 90s and like, or the 80s and like TV dinners and things like that.
Industrialization of everything.
Yeah. There's, you know, I'm a real fan of Michael Pollan. I don't know if you've ever read any of his books, but his philosophy around eating and, you know, if everyone who ate meat had to catch the meat and kill the meat that they ate, I think we'd be in a very different society today.
And I find too, like when I made the switch, I was upping my greens and my vegetables so much. And that just, I wasn't eating that before, or I was eating it a lot less. And then making the switch, I automatically said, like, I need my iron and like, I have to make sure that this is something that I take care of. And, you know, you have to be careful, like you say, with the extreme. Like, I stopped and that was my choice. But you have to make sure that you're getting all the nutrients you have. But
'cause you can be following a certain diet, let's say, for the wrong reasons and not eating healthy, even though you're following that diet. Because that diet is prescribing certain foods and telling you not to eat other foods, and it's building rules around the way you eat, where it should be intuitive and natural. Like when we were babies, we knew when we were hungry and when we were full, and I mean that's a whole other discussion about when to eat and knowing when you're hungry and when you're full. But what you choose to eat.
Did you go back? I'm going to go back to the Ironman, but did you decide you wanted to do another one after that one, or was that it for you?
It wasn't it. I raced, I think I raced another half or two after that. But that was the year after that Ironman is when we decided to launch Brava.
Cool. So let's get into that a little bit, because that turns, I think for a lot of people, they can't, you know, we all have passions in life, and you can't always translate your passion into a business or into work or something you love. And now you guys have seen some huge success. Like I was saying in the beginning, when I'm on the course, all the ladies have the Brava gear.
Yeah.
And it's kind of opened up a whole new like world. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So Jacinthe and I, we trained through that big training block together. And then I remember we went riding in Tromelon like that fall. So we were just all bundled up and we were just going for a bike ride and just kind of reminiscing on Ironman and like what we wanted to do that winter. And I was like, you know, it would be really cool to have like our own cycling triathlon brand. Like, because we were looking at pictures from the Ironman and like, you know, like I said, like, I don't think I've ever been in such good shape in my life as in 2015. And I look back at those pictures and I'm like, man, that kit, woof. Like, like it's black and red and white. Like, sorry, no, I didn't want to ditch Bart Coaching or anything with his logo. But I mean, it was a Louis Garneau, like unisex kit that everyone had from the club. And it just didn't fit right. It wasn't made for women. Like the shirt always rode up because it didn't go over our hips. The waistband dug in. So like, even if I was like, I think at the time, like I was the lowest body fat I'd ever been. Still super healthy, but like the shorts just didn't fit well, like nothing. And I looked masculine but I felt so empowered and strong that day. Like, you know, I owned the race course and like, you know, it was my day. And then I was like, yeah, we need better kits. Like we can't just keep wearing that kit, or there's got to be a better option. And there wasn't. We realized that there wasn't a better option, at least not in Canada. So there was a few American brands doing the made for women by women thing, but the style was very different. Like skull and crossbones, big American flags, fluorescent colors, like wild. And I think we were a lot more conservative than that. We just wanted something cool, you know, like some of the stuff the cycling brands in Europe were putting out, or with like a cool print on it and like something that was unique and that something that was comfortable, that didn't ride up, that didn't, you know. And then we left it at that. Like it was just like this brief discussion. And then 2 weeks later, I get an email, like super long email from Jesse. And she's like, you know, I was thinking and blah, blah, blah. We could really do this. Like, cause she's in marketing, right? Who am I? I've never worked in the clothing industry. I'm a dietitian. Like, with a science background. I just wanted something, a cool kit, right? And so we just started looking into fabrics and, you know, trying to find a distributor or, you know, a rep who would be able to help us. And we really wanted something, like, we didn't want it to be made in China. We really wanted, like, we wanted it to be top quality. Like, at first it was really just going to be like, there's one kit a year and there's a limited edition. And if you didn't get it, well, too bad for you. Like, mm-hmm. That was kind of the beginning, was kind of like that. Cause we were like, we both have jobs. Like, we, you know, it'll just be a fun side project.
Yeah.
But the more we dug, the more we found suppliers in Italy, and then we found a pattern maker, and then we started making, you know, shorts and a top, and then, like, without even really thinking more about it or calculate, it's like not as calculated as everyone might think. We just were like, we got to a point where we're like, okay, we can't not launch this. Like, we haven't come this far to like not do anything with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how we turned it around, but we launched a collection in less than a year.
Is that uncommon? I don't know.
People, when we tell them that, they're like, what? Like, because, you know, clothing brands, they'll be presenting their spring lines like a year in advance.
Right.
But we were like, we were just going to sell online and be this really simple kind of brand. And, you know, we knew the Iron Man space and we knew how it worked when you were at the Iron Man Village and had like a tent. And so yeah, we ended up launching in April of 2017. The basis of our line is really like the unique prints. I think that's really what we're known for. The unique kits and the comfort. Like, as soon as you ask a girl, like, you know, that's worn Brava, those are like, and from our customer survey, those are the two things that come out, like the quality, the comfort, and the uniqueness of the kits. And yeah, we've launched a whole collection ever since. So we're actually about to launch our fourth collection coming up, like end of March, beginning of April. Mm,
that's very exciting.
Yeah.
And including a collaboration with somebody that we've had on the podcast.
Yes,
too.
Lisa.
Lisa Jordan, yeah. Which for anybody who knows it, she's an artist and with some really cool designs. And that's actually in one of your collections, which is really awesome.
Yeah. We did a really cool collab with her because we always have a special edition. But last year, and I went to art school like for a year before I went to study nutrition. And I always had this like, this kind of keenness about me that like, I know the community and like trying to do something different. And I was like, we have to do this launch. So Lisa approached us actually. And we were like, this is like the perfect opportunity for a special edition. And then I was like, my eyes just lit up. I was like, we can do the launch in a gallery. We can get Argon 18 involved and get her to paint a bike. Like, and then we did all of those things. And I think the experience for both of us, for Lisa and ourselves, was really enriching. And I mean, she's a great person. She's a haven't seen her much since, but
no, she's a sweetheart. Really nice.
Yeah.
Really nice person, like you said, and very like soft spoken. And I think it's really cool too that you're both local Montreal.
Yeah.
You know, Montreal brand, and she's a Montreal artist. It's really neat. It's a nice story behind it.
Well, that's kind of the intention, is because if we build partnerships with people or other brands, and we're a local brand, like we're made in Quebec, As much as we can, everything is made in Canada. So supporting other local artists and brands is just part of our values, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How far have you reached with your kits? You're telling me you've got feedback from customers and stuff like that. Have you got some pretty cool stories from the kits or anything that stands out to you?
So I'm the one who goes out to a lot of the West Coast races just because I'm the Anglophone and I'm able to travel more because Jessine has two young children. I met this girl who was just like, you know, she was shopping and she was like, I can't buy a kit and race Ironman in it the next day. I was like, you shouldn't, but I'm telling you, it'll be fine. She bought the kit and she wore it on race day and she came back the next day and was like, it was the best decision I ever made. She was like, it was so comfortable. And it protected me from the sun because she bought the jersey that is UPF. And anyway, and she was like, it was so comfortable. She's like, I'm in love. And so that's just to speak that how comfortable the kit is. And I think she was American, like racing up in Ironman Whistler last year. So
cool.
It's really nice to be on site at the events because that's where you get the human interaction with the customer and you get to watch the women racing. So like the first year that we launched, the people who were wearing Brava, we knew who they were, right? Most of them, we knew who they were. And then last year, I on the banner of Ironman Cozumel on their website, like there was Stephanie Roy there in Brava, like with the tape in her hand. So it's like when you see something that you've poured so much heart and soul and passion and time and work into, like appear on an Ironman website somewhere, like it might not seem like a big deal, but like it kind of was. And now I see women wearing Brava like everywhere and I don't know who they are, but they have like a kind of a piece of us like with them, you know, it's
right.
It's kind of, it's nice. And I, because Brava is, you know, it's Italian for, celebrating women in Italian. So my grandma used to say that to me Brava. When I did something good, like Brava, like I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
And so Brava's kind of just become this slogan. So even girls who don't know each other will kind of say Brava to each other as they cross each other on the race course. So it's been like everything around Brava, like braving the day and just being proud and celebrating other people and other people's victories. It's kind of just become part of the brand.
Mm. Is that how you feel about Ironman? Like I know, like doing one myself, it brought out something in me that you don't see, or maybe you've never seen before in yourself. Is that kind of how you feel about like your own personal like journey through Ironman? Because it is it's a energy charged, emotional charged day, and you're just like. We're not competing for a podium.
But no.
It does something to you, I think.
Yeah. And it's an individual sport, but it brings people together. Yeah.
It's really, it's exactly
like that solidarity of like everyone's, you know, towing that start line on that beach and like probably nervous as fuck to get in the water or like, what did I sign up for again? But yeah, there's just that like kind of community feeling. I mean, we almost called Brava the Dawn Collective, which anyway, I could tell you so many random names that we almost called Brava. But
I like Brava.
Yeah. It's simpler, right? Yeah. But
So where's Brava going now? Where is it going next? I know you're coming out with a new collection, but what's the vision for the brand and what for anybody listening, what can people look forward to?
So we're coming out of an accelerator program with the HSA this past fall. So we've had...
HSA is a university in Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're the French business school. So we were lucky enough to get selected with 10 other companies to go through this whole accelerator program. So through that, we've gained a lot of mentorship. We have a lot of new contacts.
So accelerator means that would help jumpstart your business.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's exactly kind of
like Dragon's Den. Like maybe not like that, but
yeah, not the investment portion necessarily, but all the coaching that would come with it.
Okay.
And you know, the contacts through the, like they're really connected.
Right.
So we've been matched with a lot of, you know, really great mentors. So we're looking to expand the brand, obviously. We're already present in the rest of Canada, but we'd want to become even more present in the rest of Canada. We have some we do sell online internationally. We're going to try and pump that up a little bit, but we're also coming out with a lot of new products this year. So stay tuned.
any plans to get into menswear at all, or
possibly? I don't know if it would be in the near future, but I don't know if people ask us that because they really want a Brava men's kit or they're just jealous. But funny enough, we are asked that a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like the way your stuff looks. And I found, too, when I was looking for kits, I mean, other than Louis Garneau, there wasn't many great options. I almost feel the same way as you did looking for women's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe I just want a new kit. That looks different than
you're going to have to sign up for another race.
Okay, well, we'll see. Right now, it's just running for now. And you have a vast ambassador group, too.
Yeah.
Any new faces that you're really excited about?
Yeah. So the ambassador...
And how do, like, I guess, because you're here, how does one become an ambassador? I know how I got linked with Skechers, for example, right? And I think people look at that sometimes and they're like, they don't know how you get sponsorships. I knew some, you know, I had friends that were ambassadors. I started wearing the brand. I started, you know, sharing my performances and tagging, you know, there's a way to go about it and, you know, creating a connection. So what's the Brava way?
So we actually launch applications for the ambassador program every fall. It's laborious for us to take applications all year because you kind of want to have somebody who's committed for at least a season. But we get hundreds and hundreds of applications. And we really, like, first we're looking for people who share similar values to us, who are really present in their, you know, respective communities, who are doing things either in the triathlon, cycling, or running world. You know, there has to be some sort of presence on social media, or we can't, it's hard for us to kind of see what that person's up to. So we kind of really base ourselves on that, the person's profile in general, but we really look for, you know, anyone who can be even just starting up to anyone who's even more elite. So it's not a sponsorship program per se, but it's a program that we offer, like, you know, deep discounts and like the community vibe and like getting the girls involved. And so, you know, we're looking to do a lot of activities this year. There's a new Strava group, Zwift, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of getting girls motivated and kind of being a part of that crew, is really what that program's about.
Mm-hmm. So who's on the roster for 2020?
Man, I can
rattle off.
There's maybe, I'd say maybe 40% of the girls are the same as last year, but there's a few new girls on board. Some a bit more international too, like from Europe, and kind of some new ones from out west. So since we're trying to kind of spread our wings a bit, we need to get new ambassadors like that are a bit distance.
Mm-hmm.
But like Valérie from Skechers is on our team. She's been there from the beginning. She's a great ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
There's Alexandra, who kind of, I know her from my masters. We did our masters together and she kind of reminds me of me 10 years ago. Like, I think she's going to be a great ambassador. Stéphanie Roy, is our sponsored athlete again this year. And, I don't even know, like I'm, I guess.
There's so many, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I know my friend Jackie Peters. She's big into cycling, and she runs with Runrite.
She's on the team.
Yeah, she's on the team. Yes. Yeah. Which I'm really super. She's awesome.
And yeah.
Super pumped for her. She.
Yeah,
got
she
into
applied
cycling
and she got recommended. So yeah.
Yeah, she's great. She's the overall like really. Really awesome person.
Does she run at Runrite?
She does. Okay, I ran with her tonight.
Okay. You see, I'm not a night runner. And since we run in the mornings at track, I'm like, oh gosh, but I should come to Runrite. I'll probably start coming back in the spring.
Mm. Is your focus now running alone, or is it back? Are you going to get back into triathlon, or what's the goal?
Yeah, people keep asking me, am I going to come out of retirement? Yeah, because I haven't raced in a couple years. Well, I've done a sprint, or I'll do like a team event because I'm there. But I'm just really enjoying cycling for the fun of it, like just traveling and cycling where I go travel, and I'd like to focus on running.
Nice.
I'd like to try trail running. I haven't really tried it, and from what I hear, it's like so different. And I actually bought, like with On, we have a partnership, and I bought some trail shoes in the fall. But you know how it snowed, like. Like first day in November, I was like, well,
what?
So I haven't worn them yet. Like I have my winter trail shoes that are Gore-Tex, but I'm looking to maybe do, the Ultra Trail Hurricana this year, maybe the 28 or
that's
the 42
such,
or something like
I,
that.
I did the 65 like 2 years ago, like after Ironman, bad idea. Mm. And it was a good experience. It's kind of where I met a bunch of people from Runrite and connected with them. But I did the 28 last year and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Ultra Trail Hurricana in Charlevoix, Quebec. It's beautiful. And mm-hmm. it's like just the perfect distance, you know, if you want to just test out trail. And it's super, it's beautiful. It's really enjoyable. There's enough flat sections.
Yeah.
And there's some climbing sections, of course, you know, like you always get, but I highly recommend.
You can't go down without going up.
Yeah, exactly. But I highly recommend it. It's really awesome.
So I think my goal will be to like register for one of those races mm-hmm. and then train throughout the summer and spring and summer.
Awesome. You mentioned that like the marathon you did in the Ironman was the first one you did.
Yeah.
Have you done marathons since then?
Yeah.
And did you get to Boston? Because you
did.
Mentioned Boston.
But okay, but I'm disclaimer, I did not qualify for Boston.
Ah, okay.
So the company I work for, Abbott Nutrition, is one of the sponsors for the World Marathon Majors. It's like the major sponsor.
Right.
And they have an employee kind of lottery. And the first year they did the lottery, I got into Boston.
Nice.
And I was like, what? But I raced Ironman that August 2015 and I ran Boston in April 2016. So mm-hmm. it was like less than a year after the Ironman. So I had like a lot of volume, but I had trained through the whole winter. I was living
tough,
in the plateau at the time. And I remember I would run down Rachel and like get to the like Olympic. Was there was like some kind of loop near the Olympic Park. I would just do the loop and then come back a lot. Or
Parc La Fontaine, maybe?
No, like way further east.
Okay.
I found it tough, but I remember I found training for the road marathon. Like I was so much more tired than Ironman. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I'd get up, I'd go for a long run. Not so early on Sunday morning, but let's say I had a 3 hour, 3.5 hour run to do. And I'd be home by noon. Then I'd take a bath, like a hot bath, have something to eat. And then all I want to do would be nap all afternoon.
Yeah.
And I just remember, even if it was, I think it was 4 or 5 days a week of running, I was tired.
Yeah. It takes a lot out of you.
Yeah.
I think mentally it's tougher.
Yeah.
Because the last 2 years, yeah, I haven't been in triathlon for a couple of years now. Like I said, to just focus on running and save some money. But just doing the one sport can wear on you, for sure. You mm-hmm. need something else, active recovery day, lifting of some sort, to kind of get your mind off of it, because like it does wear on you a bit. Do you do strength training as well? I know you do some a different kind of run training with, because I see you at track every Thursday, but do you do like strength work? And
I used to a lot, and I actually just started again last year. So there was a gym near my house. It was just more of like a cross training gym, TRX, those types of things. Mm-hmm. And then stopped going there through the fall, but at my office, at our office, there's a gym. So I've been going there once to twice a week.
Mm. Do you think that's sufficient? Do you find it helps you with the running, the lifting?
I'm not doing like heavy lifting. I'm doing like maybe more random exercise. I don't have like a plan, mm-hmm. but the goal would be to get more of a structure in this year if I'm going to be training for trail. So
okay.
I need to put that in place.
And more climbing, more strength in the legs for that.
Yeah.
The climbing just, it's killer.
Yeah.
And even running downhill too, it's a completely different game, you know? So.
I used to run track at with another coach when I was younger, and he would make me do a ton of strength stuff. And if I could remember all the exercises he made me do, like the squat jumps, but with weights, and sometimes I'd be like, "Are you kidding me? Like, yeah. I can't do this." But or like these special things I would do on with my ankles and like. But it was so great. Like, mm-hmm. I'd have to get that plan back somehow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, like, looking back on your career, let's say, is there anything you'd change or any advice you'd give yourself at the start before getting into it?
My athlete career?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I didn't think so because you just, like, have this good way about you where you're just having fun and enjoying yourself, you know? I'm kind of the same way. I just got into it for fun, and I think it's fun to get into a sport early because early on you see these big improvements, which is great. But yeah, I was wondering if you kind of had a different mindset there. What's your greatest accomplishment so far?
In sport?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say it's the Ironman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty proud of that day.
It's a feeling like no other. Like, what was your feeling crossing the finish line?
I couldn't believe it. Like, I remember when I came off the bike, and I knew that Jacinthe and this guy, Francis, one of our friends, was ahead of me. And the other girlfriend was not far behind me. I wasn't sure where exactly. So I was like, I'm going to see my friends soon. Like, it had been so long that I hadn't seen them on the bike. And I caught, like, my coach and was at the 7K mark. And I remember seeing him and, like, smiling and being like, it's going really well. Like, I'm running 5:45 or something. Like, I was holding pace. And he was like, be careful, it's just the beginning. So, but that 7K marker was also the 35K marker on the other side. Mm. And so I did the first loop. And then when I was coming back and, you know, coming back to that same 35K marker, I was like, holy shit, like, I've got 7K to go. And I looked at my watch and I think it was like 11 hours, 15 minutes. And I was like, oh, damn, like, I might get in under 12 hours even if I keep a pace of 6, like I became the Energizer Bunny. Like, I was just so excited because I was like, I'm almost there. Like, mm-hmm. And there was I remember the end of that course, there was two, like, they made us like go into like this crescent, but that was like a steep downhill, like maybe a 600 meter, like, straight stretch where there was an aid station, and then climb back up this like steep hill, which kills it, my quads were killing by that point. And then like at the time, I don't know if you've ever run Muskoka, it was where they ended at the golf course. And the last kilometer was like 400 meters, like running downhill and then another uphill and then like a little straightaway back into the parking lot.
Uphill.
But it was like long, like you, and I was like, okay, I've got those two like hills to go. But I just remember seeing my husband and I was like, okay, I'll see you at the finish line. And I was like, just go. And I had like tears of joy at the finish line. Like, I saw 11:54 or whatever it was. And I was like, no way. Like, no way would I've ever thought that was that I would have been able to do that. Mm. I like impressed myself and I was so proud and like the day just went perfectly. And I don't think everyone's Ironman experience maybe is like that, but I think everyone's first is super special. And like, I mean, obviously there's other people who perform and go faster than that, but for that course, that day, that time of my life, it was just like perfect. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah, it's such a unique experience, I'd say, like no other. And what, do you have any other big goals that you're after now, or any dreams? Do you have a dream to go to Kona one day? Or
No. I don't know if, you know, 12 hours of suffering in that sun is really something I'd love.
Yeah. You got your dad to cheer for you over
there, yeah. Yeah. He lives on another island, but I mean, if I ever qualified, I would go, obviously. But that's not one of my goals. Like, I'm not going to race another Ironman to try and qualify. I feel like the caliber since 2015 has gotten much higher.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
All
over the place.
Yeah.
It's the marketing for Ironman has gone through the roof. Mm-hmm. So have the prices, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super competitive. Very, very competitive. But yeah, you got to do it for the love of it, you know, and just stick with it if that's what you want to do, you know, just have fun.
I may do another one day, but we'll see. I'll play it by ear.
I'm with you. Maybe when you sign up, I'll sign up. What does running mean to you? What does triathlon and running mean to you?
What does it mean to me? That's not an easy question. For me, it just means being with yourself, being with nature or being with friends and being active. I really appreciate the accessibility of running, that you can do it anytime, anywhere. And I'm really glad I found that sport. Yeah.
It's such a nice community, like you say, and Montreal is actually a great place for that and for training and all that as well. You know, where do you like to train in Montreal? What are some of your favorite spots to go?
So I live, near Verdun. So I can go, like, I'm near the canal, near the Atwater Market. So I can go that way, all the way up and down if I want a flat course. Or I could go along the water in Verdun and go, like, all the way to La Salle, Lachine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really like track. Like, I really do like track at least once a week. It's, like, my go-to training. And then I do like hills, too. So I don't mind going to do repeats or like running to the mountain and back. But in terms of spots, those are pretty much the spots I'll go. 'Cause like, I'd prefer to not have to drive somewhere to go running unless we were going to go run at the mountain or somewhere further, you know, than in the city.
Yeah. But like local is always better, especially after a long day.
Yeah. I run a lot with Catherine, who lives like 2 kilometers from me. So either I can meet her halfway and then we go towards the water, or we usually do that on Sundays.
She also does track with us too.
Yes.
So yeah, it's fun to have familiar faces.
A run neighbor buddy.
Run buddy, yeah.
Yeah.
Where can people find out more about Brava, more about you and all that?
Yeah. So, give us a follow on Instagram. It's at Brava Triathlon. It's bravatriathlon.ca as well, the website. Keep an eye out for the new collection. Sign up for the newsletter. We do not spam anybody.
Nice.
We really just send when we have time. newsletter with if there's any promotions or any new blogs up or anything like that. So we really just try and keep it to content that's relevant.
Cool.
But yeah, the new collection will be launching beginning of April. So I'm actually really excited for this one. It's probably my favorite yet.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's saying a lot.
And a lot of new interesting products.
Cool.
Like my favorite prints. Like, yeah, I think it's going to be a hit.
Well, I can't wait to see it, and I'm going to take your word for it, but I'm sure it'll be... I can't wear it, unfortunately, but I'm sure we'll be seeing it up and down the Ironman course in Trombo this summer. So thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It was on short notice, but nice chat nonetheless. And yeah. Look forward to seeing what you do with Brava, and we'll see you on the track next week.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday night at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit our website, iamarunner.ca, and check out their Instagram, @WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram @TheRundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.